It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A very nice.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't notice that in real time. but that was pretty good by, who was the, play-by-play? I know it was Sanchez. I don't even know who was doing play-by-play in that game. It wasn't Ross Tucker, I can tell you that.
Nope.
But that was, I thought, the low point of the game. To me, I thought the game was sort of over right there. It didn't end up being that, but that to me was the low light of the game. A zero blitz on Stafford, who in the first half against the blitz, had been eating them alive. I mean, really, and that's the book on him. It's been the book on him for a long time. I'm surprised they even went that way. But everything about that play was depressing. You send the house, no pressure. Jones gets smoked by Kupp. I mean, he tried to knock it down and didn't. Stafford jogs down the field, flashing the zero blitz sign to McVay. They came back and made it competitive, but man, I thought the game was over right then and there, and I thought that was another one, another sort of instance that was indicative of the poor coaching job that was done by, by Jerod Mayo and DeMarcus Covington. I thought that they had a very uninspired scheme going against them. They weren't able to get pressure, and I put that more on the guys up front and the actual players, but not a lot of creativity, not a lot of stunts, you know, not a lot of mixed disguise coverages or anything. They either were back in zone or they were blitzing everybody, and Stafford knew exactly what to do about it.
They took nothing away, and it was very anti-Belichick. Remember, Belichick would be like, oh, we're going to take their best player away. They have two receivers, and you didn't take either of them away.
Nope.
You decided, for whatever reason, that this whole boundary corner Christian Gonzalez thing, that I don't think it took them long to figure out, like, hey, you're keeping him over there?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to go somewhere else and have a fun day, and you end up with 200-yard receivers. They get in the end zone a couple times. Early on, I will say, Gonzo got beat a couple times by Kupp, and Stafford actually missed a couple throws on him.
He did.
But you got to go down swinging. This team, we just talked about it, has so many limitations talent-wise, that if you have an advantage, if you have a strength, to just kind of put it over there and let the offense dictate that he's going to be a non-factor in this game really made no sense, and you made no adjustment. The blitz, I guess you're being aggressive. I don't love it, and it certainly looked terrible. When you send seven guys, and it's like, wow, how'd they pick up all those guys? Like,
they picked them all up. He had time to look around.
Oh, yeah. No,
it wasn't like he saw him and he just threw it right away. Like, he stood there, he looked, he went through his progressions, he saw him, and he got the ball out.
Meanwhile, other teams do, like, one little cross or twist, and our own line's like, what the hell happened? What'd they do? Crazy.
Drake May, when he got strip-sacked, he had 1 second. I mean, not even 1 second.
He did not hold the ball
that long. You send the house, and he had twice that at least. And I just think, you know, in general, it was a tough game. And up front, I don't think trading Josh Uche or moving on from even Matthew Judon in the beginning of the year is some big crime and really hurt this this defensive front. I don't think those guys, I mean, you see Judon, he's not doing anything in Atlanta, and Uche wasn't doing anything here. So, I don't know. The guys that you have, I think, are underachieving a little bit. Keon White's completely fallen off since that first game, last week notwithstanding. I was expecting them to carry some of that momentum from last week into this game. I thought they were going to be having some swagger up front and looking at those guys and saying, you know what, we just manhandled the Chicago team and got to Caleb Williams dozen times, whatever it was, 9-10 times, and we're gonna do that again this week. And instead, the Rams fat guys just completely manhandled them. I mean, that's just long and short of it. They didn't really get any pressure on them at all. Zero sacks. I think there were three or four QB hits, and those were all the pressures I even remember. Like, most of the time, he could do whatever he wanted to out there.
Yep. There was one coverage kind of hit Jennings got on him, but other than that, you didn't get any boost out of, and this is no shot at him because I was surprised he even played, but Barmore didn't really provide much of a boost. Ngakoue First of all, I forgot that he was even – it was like second quarter. I was like, hey, isn't Ngakoue supposed to be playing? And then I actually saw him, started watching him, was doing – it was like he was brother-in-law in it with the tackle. They were just like, hey, patty cake you, you patty cake me, and we'll just stand here until the play's over. I saw no boost out of the veteran that you bring in that does have a resume and a history. It was – you know, Dietrich Wise was out. That didn't – I think you saw, though, and I told you I thought this was going to be at least a part of the case – Caleb Williams and the Bears were a mess. Mm-hmm. That was the bit, you know, Bill Belichick noted it quite vociferously.
Yes.
But I think that was quite clear. A guy got fired because of it. You weren't going to have the same success against even a banged up line. It's
their
not a great offensive line.
Yeah, true.
But like Matthew Stafford is going to do whatever it takes to get rid of the ball. I didn't even think he had a great day. He was making some weird, for a guy who has one of the greatest arms in the history of football, probably, he was like, everything was like a spot throw. He was kind of lobbing it up. That led to the Nacua diving and then, like,
right,
knocking the wind out of himself or whatever happened there. There was
what a play by Nacua, by the way.
He's so
good. That was awesome. No fear, just full-on laid out for that one.
They're both good.
I mean, that was great.
All you people that told me, oh, I wouldn't want Cooper Kupp, he's old and he's injury-prone, I would take that in a heartbeat, even if he does get hurt eventually.
Yeah.
Just to teach these receivers, like, what it's like to be a scrappy, hard-working, NFL-productive wide receiver, there would be value in that. But the biggest takeaway for me is – they have two guys they throw to, and you allowed them to throw to those two guys.
Yep.
Like, you put up no fight, no wrinkles, didn't adjust, and that was the other thing. So they adjusted. They clearly realized what you're doing with Gonzo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great. Punch, counterpunch. Now you counterpunch. Do something. You didn't do anything. Kyle Duggar, I thought, tackled really poorly.
Yeah.
I know our guy John Jones. We'll talk to him. He put out the tweet that, you know, deserved better from him. Even on that blitz, I don't like – you're leaving him alone on an island with an all-pro receiver. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't really blame him on that.
I don't either. And he made a great play at the end of the game on, I think it was on the Kua, where he knocked that ball away.
Yeah,
and
oh, yeah.
That gave the team
a
chance.
I mean, a late punch.
Yeah.
He made me laugh out loud. I think Nacua had a catch on him earlier in the game. Tackle, boom, hits the out. Is laying on his back on the sideline and then comes through Jonathan Jones with like a punch.
Yeah, it was
the latest punch ever.
But
I love how he does that. and it actually paid off on the later play. Those late punches work. But I don't think I thought he had as bad a game as he thought, basically based on the tweet he sent out. And again, we'll talk to him and we'll ask him about it. There were the coaching issues. DeMarcus Covington and Gerard Mayo did not exactly glorify themselves yesterday.
Yeah, I agree. When you have Gonzalez on one side and he's just shading DeMarcus Robinson and the two other guys are killing you, I mean, you got to do something. You got to adjust somehow. Mayo addressed that this morning and said we had a plan going into the game. Yeah, we know you did.
Yeah, like, that's like the wind was blowing one way at the start of the game. When it's changed by overtime, change your plan. Change your decisions. Don't just stick with everything. You had a scheme. Everybody has. And then the game declares itself, and they figured it out. Now, I think the plan was terrible from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to lie there. I think it's a terrible plan. Why would you? Every week we should be having the discussion, and they should be having the discussion, how are we utilizing Gonzalez to make them do something they don't want to do, right? That whole play left-handed theory or – I don't even care. If you think Kupp is the number two now, and you say, put Gonzo on Kupp, and then we'll double Nacua. Okay, let's talk about it. If you want to put him on Nacua, double Kupp. Take it. But neither? You're just going to, like, let him waste away on the backside of everything? That was ineptitude. That was worthy of calling around and seeing how you help a coordinator and a coach who aren't doing a very good job defensively.
I agree with that. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll go to your phones here in just a minute. But I'd like to address an allegation in the Twitch chat that I saw during the commercial break. People are thinking that Drake May got up very quickly after the interview was over, got up and left. And they're suggesting, due to the fact that I have a Taco Bell cup right here, that I may have ripped one.
Oh. Is that what was going on?
And that's why he walked out. I'm here to tell you, and I think you can all, you're all in the room with me. I didn't rip one.
I wasn't as close as he was, though.
And if I had, I would have said, oh, sorry, rip one.
He who denies it supplies it.
That's true. But I have two other, Brian's sitting right next to me. Brian, did I rip one? He's saying no.
Because I noticed he did.
You would have smiled if I ripped
one. I do have a very sensitive schnoz.
You do. And I think that it would have been, and listen, I mean, I'm not going to lie and say I've never ripped one in here before. But that did not happen just now. I made a point of holding it while our guest was here. Now that he's gone, it's you know.
Maybe that's why he didn't want to stick around and take a picture. He's like, with the stinky guy?
Yeah. I mean, hey, listen. You know, we all have our good and bad days. But
you
that,
did have Taco
that
Bell.
That did not happen. And I did have
that's
Taco
a poor
Bell,
pre-show decision.
I suppose.
For the rest of us, anyway.
But it has not revealed itself to be a problem
yet. I still got 3 hours here.
It's true.
And we got John Jones maybe coming in?
Is John Jones coming in here?
I don't know. I've never
John Jones has never come in here before. That would be nice.
Kind of hurts.
Yeah, hurts me right here. You know, cuts deep. But anyway, let's go to the phone. 617-779-7937. I neither supplied it, did the crime, or said the rhyme. Jay is in North Carolina. Go ahead, Jay.
As one of your earlier comments about the number of coaches, too many cooks do spoil the broth. If this guy, you got to give these guys a chance to play. I think in 1 year with the right drafts, the Patriots could be at the level of the L.A. Rams. And the L.A. Rams are a damn good team. And the Patriots came within an eye's breadth of unseating them. So, do you guys remember Sam Huff at all?
Sam Huff. Name yeah. sounds familiar,
He was the dirtiest player that ever played the game. And the bottom of the pile, he would bite people's ankles, and preferably not his own.
Okay.
But the thing was, with the offensive line of the Patriots, I say bite, kick, gouge, whatever you got to do to protect Drake May, because he is the franchise. And I just say protect that guy at all costs. I think the Patriots, it was like an engine. That was the engine, it sparked, but it didn't catch. It's only a matter of time, folks.
All right. It's only a matter of time. Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. I think that's been the theme of this whole season.
Yes. Right?
Protect Drake May. Don't let him get carried. That's the reason why people didn't want him to start. I think that strip sack yesterday was exactly what people had in mind when they said don't play him, because something like that could happen, because he got rocked on that play.
He did.
I saw him, and I thought, oh, boy. I thought that was worse than the play he got concussed on. I thought that was worse than when the guy on the Jets body slammed him in that game he came into. I thought that was about as quickly and as impactful as any QB sack that we've seen all year. And he popped right back up, and he was fine. So, you know, I mean, listen, he's a tough kid. He's resilient. He's big. And he's not writhing around in the grass. You know, when Brissett got sacked, you could tell he was
Oh,
hurt.
My God.
He was down there. He's like, oh,
and
you
they
know?
Would, like, zoom in, and you'd see the facial grimaces and expressions and pain.
Yeah. It looked like a World War II documentary. And in May's case, you know, he's not quite as demonstrative. He's younger, too, obviously. He hasn't taken as much punishment. But, he was popping right back up. That's going to happen. You know, I mean, it's going to happen. I think that was our retort to all those people saying, don't play him, don't play him. He's going to get killed. He's going to get hit no matter what. He's playing football. He's a quarterback, and he's playing for the Patriots, who don't have a great line. They got a center in there snapping the ball who is not even in the NFL, right? I mean, like, well, he's in the NFL, but he's on a practice squad. Like, this is the hand he's been dealt. And it's not the best hand ever, but it's not necessarily one that's going to drastically improve quickly, I don't think. There's too many holes to patch. He has to learn how to work with this, and he's doing it.
And he seems fine with it.
Yeah.
I mean, even when I asked him about the design runs, he said something about, like, I'm a big kid, I can run or something.
Right.
I think he's confident in his own ability to protect himself and take hits. And I haven't really seen even the concussion. He didn't indicate that he was hurt, right? Like, it came from upstairs.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, he stayed down on the ground a little bit, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, that happens in football.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do that just to kind of, so you don't know exactly when they are hurt. Like,
right.
I'll just collect my thoughts and then get up. I've seen no indication that he is really banged up. Look, you're right. When we were talking to Jacoby Brissett week one, week two, week three, we were asking him, hey, if he came in before, we said, hey, how mm-hmm. you feeling? You okay? Like, he was taking an absolute beating.
Yeah.
And we talked about it was, I think Gerard Mayo may have also said it was unsustainable. I've seen nothing that lacks sustainability with the way Drake May is playing. I've had no fear that he's going to get hurt, even though he had the little head injury, concussion, mm-hmm. whatever, protocol thing. I do want to, did you listen to the end of Jones and Keefe on your way in?
I heard grab
did you
bag.
Hear
is that
the,
what you're talking about?
Yeah, it was a little before that. There is one critic out there. We might be able to go back and find the audio. There was a caller that shredded him, said he just keeps losing us games.
I did hear that. Yeah, I heard that caller. Yeah,
The guy was like, that's a hypothetical. And Keith goes,
You're a hypothetical.
You're a hypothetical.
Yeah.
But that was
checkmate.
One of the first. Right. That was one of the first, like, really open negative assessments of Drake May that I've heard, that he's somehow costing them games.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's ridiculous. I said to Fitzy last night on the Six Rings postgame show, no disrespect to our guy, I like him. If Jacoby Brissett had played in this game, you might have lost by what I said, you know, 30-13
yep.
or gotten blown out. Drake May is keeping you in games. He's not winning them. In fact, you can argue he's failing to take advantage of the opportunities he actually creates himself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee creates a massive opportunity by getting you to overtime. Then it kind of went, sad trombones. This game creates an opportunity to be a one score late. Went, sad trombone. But he's keeping you in games.
He
he's
is.
Making plays.
He's definitely keeping you in games. And I do think that there's the whole end of the game aspect, you know, that clutch gene and everything, which in the Tennessee game, even with the interception at the end, You looked at that and thought, wow, what a clutch play just to get there. If he keeps throwing game-ending interceptions, that's going to be further and further away until people forget about it completely. You know what I mean? Like that's.
Oh, yeah. Maybe if his receivers either look for the ball or try to go get the ball in those situations, he'll be better off.
Sure.
He has too much trust in his receivers right now.
Maybe he does. But throwing it into double coverage at the end of games when you don't need to is, you
know,
I'm sorry.
Double coverage in the first one if the guy doesn't fall down. One receiver fell down, and the other guy didn't try to catch the ball.
The receiver fell down, but the guy came over. It was a
high
ball. He
was covering the guy who fell down.
All right. We're going to relitigate this. They were both.
I continue to say they do not help out their quarterback with the game on the line.
Sure.
There's only one clutch guy on this team, and his name's Drake May.
And it would be nice if they went up there and tried to make more of an effort to knock the ball away, but the fact that they have to jump up and knock the ball away, Pop Douglas is 5'6". What's he going
to
do?
He didn't try to knock the ball away. He was just like,
he didn't even know the ball was coming.
He was running like Forrest Gump. He never even knew the ball was in the air.
He didn't even know it was there. That's true. But
I didn't like that either. I thought he kind of threw Drake under the bus post game when he said, you know, that's on both of us, him and me. No. And that was sort of the stem of my question. Do they have to see it through your eyes? You do. He didn't say it. I'll say it for him. The quarterback sets what we're doing here. He is Tom Brady. People don't want to acknowledge it. He's the franchise quarterback.
Okay.
So as a wide receiver, I don't give a rat's cutucus what I want to do. It's what Drake wants me to do.
Fine.
It's what Drake sees. It's what Drake thinks I'm going to be. You can put your brain away. Just use Drake's. Whatever Drake thinks is the way this offense runs.
Okay, and I agree with that. But he wasn't expecting the ball. So
that's on him.
To turn around and look for it when he's not expecting it is a tough ask. 617-779-7937. Alex Van Pelt had a pretty good day, I thought. Team got beat in the trenches, but you saw some creativity. You saw Drake May doing what he wanted to do, certainly early on in the game, and then at the end. We'll talk about that with your phone calls right after Stiz gets you caught up on what you're trying.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Trending. All right. That was a nice highlight yesterday. I enjoy any time that fat guy gets a touchdown. Big boy touchdowns are always something I enjoy. Vidarian Lowe breaking off from the block and getting open in the end zone. Drake floated one right into his hands. He caught it. And the rest is history. They didn't win the game, but that was a nice play there. And I thought it was indicative of a more, I don't know, creative
sure.
game plan there for Alex Van Pelt, someone who I think heard the noise this week and decided to come out with a pretty strong strategy. And I think Drake May and the offense executed it pretty well. I mean, they're still limited. They are what they are. But I thought in general, that's good Rams team over there with some good players up front. Not the best secondary in the world, although I do think they're a little underrated. And May and the offense, I thought, did a nice job of taking what the defense gave them, of sort of tricking them a little bit. Now, it was juxtaposed with the Rams, who were pretty much doing whatever they wanted to the Patriots defense, and Sean McVay and the rest of those guys kind of marching up and down the field, getting into the end zone, scoring all those touchdowns. But I thought Alex Van Pelt had a pretty good day. Not as good as Stiz during trending thought everything was going. Stiz, if you missed it during trending, I didn't realize this, but the Patriots might be going to the playoffs here.
Patriots now fall to 8-4 on the season after
8-4. Where the hell did you get that from? Where'd 8-4 come from?
I am so sorry. There is all I can say is that I have so much stuff scribbled all over my trending report. But you know, it's like that thing: dress for the job that you want, not
exactly.
the job you have.
Speak
you
it know? Into existence.
Exactly. That's what I was going for.
What I thought you were referring to was what I see a lot of the Bill Belichick loyalists who keep popping up every
that's
time they lose a
I'm
game.
I'm one of them.
Talking about, well, if Bill was coaching the team,
damn
they'd
right.
be an 8-win team. They'd be playoff bound, and this would be totally different, and they were stupid for firing Bill. And if Bill was here, everything would be so much better. Like, really? It's amazing how the Bill Belichick loyalists went from when they were 1-6 if Bill, you know, like this team's worse than last year's team, right? That's what people were saying. Last year's team with Bill, that was better than what you're seeing right now. I bet you miss Bill now, don't you? And now it's, well, if Bill was coaching this team, they'd have 8 wins. Like, which one is it? Was last year's 4-win team better than this team? Or would Bill coaching this team make it an 8-win team headed for the playoffs? It's got to be one or the other, folks. It can't be both.
Well, I got into a big fight with a guy in the post-game show last night. I know. Surprise, surprise.
You got in a fight with someone?
The guy was telling me about, like, how good a coach Bill was the last few years and how none of this stuff would have happened. And I'm fine.
That's insane.
It really is. Like, were they under a rock for the last few years? Because if you told me Bill Belichick circa 2004 shows up with that staff, this team might be better. I would agree with that. But I'm sorry. I saw 2023. I saw 2022. I saw 2021. It was a debacle. Mm-hmm. We used to mock on a weekly basis the halftime shows and the national announcers that'd be like, this is really uncharacteristic of a Bill Belichick team. And they said it every week.
Every
time. So therefore it became characteristic of a Bill Belichick team. Poorly coached, penalties, out of position, things of that nature. And to be fair, they're doing some of that now. I was really, really not happy to learn. I had kind of accepted the Vidarian Lowe penalty that ruined your Hunter Henry catch.
It did.
I'd kind of accepted it as that's doing business in 2024. They get you on one of those every once in a while. We saw it in the preseason. Blah, blah. And then when Mayo comes out and he's like, well, yeah, I mean, they warn you before the game and then they warned him twice before they called it. Well, now I have no sympathy for you.
Right.
They warned you twice. You got two freebies. It's like box in like Little League Baseball.
I still didn't think it was a penalty, but like fine.
I don't even care. Right, they warned you.
They did warn him.
If they don't like it, don't do it. Right?
Yep.
Doesn't matter what you think or I think. There's a guy with a stripe and he has a yellow thing and he's like, I'm going to throw it if you keep doing that. Mm-hmm. And it's ballsy for you to keep doing that. I actually thought it was a penalty. I thought it was one of the worst ones I've seen when I saw the because I saw all these Patriots fans, you people. Oh, this is a penalty. Yeah, it is. It's a penalty. They've made it clear.
It is sometimes. Down. Sometimes it isn't.
Well, I that's mean, how everything is in the NFL.
The Chiefs, holding, they don't call it on the Chiefs. And,
oh, you're one of those people.
No,
now.
I'm just saying that you see you're Jonah Williams Patriot doing it all fan. The time.
No, Jonah and Williams also is the false start. He jumps it. I have a new theory on that, too. I think.
Wait, what are you talking about, then?
I'm talking about lining up improperly as
right when
Logan.
He wasn't lined up and they said that he was
he's
in the
off
backfield
the line
already.
Of scrimmage.
But
yeah,
he wasn't.
Jonah
I
Williams.
Think he was.
It's not in already like he false started. He lined up in the backfield according to them. Jonah Williams jumps the snap, which people have been doing for years.
Okay, fair enough.
And right, we saw that yesterday. Mm-hmm. I have a new theory. I think teams, and I've heard nobody admit this, I think teams are giving those guys, whoever that guy is that feels like he needs a jump start, mm-hmm. I think there's like two snap counts or like a longer word or something, because we saw it yesterday. I think it was the Rams and Jared Verse jumped off sides.
Yes.
Or something. There was something. And I'm wondering now if teams are actually like, say we're going on three, but you're going on huh, and everybody else is going on ut. You know what I mean? Like
you're going on hibbity and you're going on who.
Something like that, where they're giving that guy that little jump, and the center, if he's not on time, it looks really bad. But as long as the center does it, it's that fine line that they give him. But the low one, no. That's that damn penalty we've had since Hockley called it 17 times in the preseason. And they warned you twice? Well, now you're just being a dink, right?
Yep.
It's like your kids. If you warn them a bunch of times and they keep doing it, now you're grounded.
Yep.
Now you're being a jerk. Now you're questioning my authority. And that's why I have no sympathy. And it ruined another recruiting video.
Yeah.
That's a recruiting video. And it also, Hunter Henry took a hit to the lower back that was totally unnecessary.
Yeah.
Because that play didn't happen. I actually was surprised he got up so quickly and was able to not, you know, a 30-something-year-old tight end does not need to take a helmet to the lower back.
No, he does not. 617-779-7937. Let's go to the phones here. John's in the car. He's been waiting patiently with a thought on Drake May. Go ahead, John.
Hey, you know, I'm just listening to Mayo today is just ridiculous. Like, but the fact that he's sitting there getting all huffy about, you know, the fact that his owner went out and was talking to people when 2 months ago, this plan, we heard about their grand plan for the development of Drake May. And the plan was, I don't know if you guys forget, but it was to watch Jacoby Brissett, who's like, who was a pretty good veteran, who was going to school him and going to teach him the ways. And then how long did that work? Like 4 weeks of like, watching him be atrocious. I think at this point, like, it would be reasonable to say, you guys were talking about if Belichick was here, they might have 8 wins. How about the fact that if Drake May started in week one, like Jones and I wanted, he would have, maybe this team would have 8 wins. But no, we have to go with that plan. But we can't question you because then you get all huffy and puffy. But like, it's crazy because Andy, I know you sat there and you listened to it. That the post game press conferences down there have gone way beyond Red Soxville. Like, okay, Bob Soshi is now asking questions out there. We have 10 minutes of like why I was wearing this pin, which I know it's a great cause, but like, we can't ask you questions about, you know, whether you're going to like make the team better, but you're going to give like five hours. It's just like, I'm tired of this BS like smokescreen that we get. It's like, no, we're done with this. Like Mayo is got to go. I'm sick of this crap.
All right, thanks for the call. I thought the worst thing about that press conference was when Mayo said we were in control of the
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely.
What are you talking about?
It's like he didn't watch the same game I watched.
What are you talking? I know you had the ball more, but you had the ball more because they were scoring quickly. Like, you didn't have the ball more because you were controlling right. the game.
When the other team forces the TV station to put up a graphic, first time since whatever that they scored on consecutive offensive plays,
yeah.
that's why you don't have the ball. And part of it was, even when they were moving the ball, they never got to third down.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
They were like first down, second down. Okay, first down. First down, first down. They never – you held them, I think, to 8 third downs over 10 drives or something like that.
Yeah, hold on. I'm looking it up right now. They were 2 of 8 on third down.
Like
Patriots were 6 of 14.
Your first and second down defense was putrid.
That stretch in the second quarter, I don't think they even got to third down. You're right. I don't think they even got there.
I never felt that – well, defensively, I never felt you were in control of the game, ever. Offensively, there were times I felt like Drake May and the offense were kind of controlling the mm-hmm. game. They were doing what they wanted.
They were going on long drives, but they didn't all end up in points.
No, and that's
the
problem.
I mean, that's, yeah. Like,
absolutely,
you can control the tempo, I guess.
Ever since Gerard bragged about them going like 8 of 9 in the red zone, remember that like 2 weeks ago? He's like,
yes.
Yeah, last couple games went 8 of 9 in the red. Ever since then, they kind of stink in the red zone. They don't finish drives, in part because they don't try to finish drives all the time.
Yeah.
They've kind of gotten a little wishy-washy play not to lose that we talked about earlier.
2 for 5 in the red zone. The Rams were 3 for 4.
Yeah. And some of, you know, when you score from 69 yards out, you don't have to go in the red
That's
zone.
True. You definitely do not. 617-779-7937. Joe's in Melrose. Hi, Joe.
Hey, guys. I'm really encouraged by yesterday. I think, like, Drake May is developing really well. That's his best game yet. Like Gerard Mayo and his coaching staff deserve a lot of credit for all the progress he's made, and he keeps getting better and better. I think like you get like maybe sign T. Higgins in the offseason, get a left tackle. They're gonna definitely be a playoff team in 2025. And I think they're so close to having everything click. I mean the interception at the end, you just gotta. I mean that's kind of the thing you have to deal with the rookie quarterback and, you know, second year receiver. They're not on the same page, but, you know, eventually they're going to get that down. Everything's going to click, and they're going to have a really bright future with Drake May.
Thanks for the call, Joe. I think that everyone's sort of on that same wavelength right now, even though the team's not in terms of Drake May, maybe not necessarily putting the T. Higgins and all those other people around them, but the progression and trajectory of Drake May is something that we're all looking at. Now, you put this in the email, which I was surprised to read this. But you're like, Drake May gets more love for doing nothing than any quarterback ever. And you're kind of right. Like, he.
See how much objectivity I have?
I'll say this. I was not expecting to read that from you. Not at all. Let me find the exact quote here because I thought it was very good. The unanimous support of May is borderline unprecedented for a guy who's done so little. He's not winning. He's turning the ball over. And yet everybody loves him. Crazy, but also fun. Which is a way you could describe Andy Hart as well. Crazy, but also fun.
And I would take that.
Yeah, no, sure.
But
like, it's true. You're right.
It's one thing if fans are super excited despite the fact there's not really much return on the investment just yet. Or even local reporters who I think we as a media crew has dealt with some crap for the last 3 years. Now, other areas be like,
how do you figure?
Like boring games that I didn't want to watch,
yeah,
but I was forced to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
When they couldn't score more than like 6 points, when everything was field goals, when Cam Newton the second half of that season sucked.
Yes, he did.
Right? Like that whole thing. And now it's fun. So even us getting overexcited just because we haven't seen fun and offensive execution in a while and a young quarterback and like, oh, my God, we've entered 2024. We have one of those guys.
Yeah.
He can run. He can throw. But national people like the Dan Orlovskys, the Grudens of the world, mm-hmm. McVays of the world, these are people that are supposedly like quarterback experts.
Yeah.
They've made their careers, and they are over the moon for a guy who doesn't really win and – doesn't always take care of the football. Like, that amazes me. It's what, like, Jaden Daniels, I get. He started his career, whatever, like 6-2 or something.
Even Bo Nix. Even Bo Nix.
Bo Nix isn't getting a shred of the love that Drake May is getting.
What has,
and he's killing it.
Like, what is it? Makes me believe we've now entered a generation where my recruiting videos are even more important than I ever knew they were.
You might be right, yeah.
Like, people don't actually care about the final score or the substance or any of that. They're like, holy crap, did you see that throw he made across his body, underhanded, sideways? Like, we may have started to learn it in the Super Bowl with Mahomes, mm-hmm. when everybody was raving about his incomplete passes,
sure.
in the Super Bowl, almost taking away from, I don't know, Tom Brady was becoming still the greatest ever and whooping his ass.
Yeah, that does, I mean, that's fine, but that also, that can have a short shelf life, just ask Anthony Richardson, you know?
Like, absolutely.
I mean, you can have that go for a week or two, but then all of a sudden you make some mistakes and you start not playing as well, and people will forget about all that.
And it's, I love
really
May.
No more than middle of the pack.
What was that?
That was
what
Bill. Was that was Bill from Arlington earlier today on Jones and Keith that Andy was referencing.
Okay, yeah.
Right, one guy that is not happy with Drake May.
He's really no more than middle of the pack.
Well, I mean, statistically, yes, that is what he is right now. He's a middle of the pack quarterback. I think his QB rating is 19th or something, but that's for someone who's played 5-6 games.
And that's up, because yesterday was like 100.
Yeah, it's going up. So, I mean, you know, his rating's right there, I think right around Stafford and, like, Herbert and those guys, which, again, it's incomplete. He hasn't played that much, but it is getting up there. And I think I read that games that he's started, they're now averaging over 20 points a game. And it was like 12 or something with Brissett. So that's significant. I mean, that with this team, that's significant to me. 617-779-7937. We are waiting right now on Jonathan Jones, who will be joining us by phone, we think sometime pretty soon. In the meantime, we'll take a look over on the other side of the ball. Drake May's wide receivers. Is it time to clean house, or should they clean house in the offseason? What do you do about this? What do you do about this situation? What do you do about Jalen Polk? You had a wide receiver get cut over the weekend, and Tyquan Thornton didn't really galvanize the rest of them to go out there and play their best game. So we'll talk about the wide receivers on this team next. WEEI Afternoons, we are live here from Gillette Stadium on a Patriots Monday, and joining us right now is Patriots defensive back Jonathan Jones, who's brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Mr. Jones, how are we doing today?
How's it going?
Going pretty good. Let's go ahead and jump right in. That was a tough loss yesterday, obviously. It was a bit of an up-and-down game for you, as there was the Cooper Kupp play on that zero blitz. Let's start there. Unfortunately, we'll get the bad stuff out of the way first. On that play, you knew everybody was blitzing. Were you expecting them maybe to get to Stafford a little bit quicker and that you wouldn't have to cover for that long?
No, it wasn't a true, you know, all-out max blitz. It's kind of one of our simulated blitzes, and it's kind of more for when they're in their, you know, tight splits, and hopefully we can get some simulated pressure that way. But at the end of the day, you know, our job to cover. You know, they made a heck of a pass, heck of a throw down the seam, you know, and I didn't make the play.
So you went to Twitter to say, I owe NEP better than today, keep grinding. Why'd you feel the need to do that? I mean, I'm sure you've had good games, bad games before. Like, what made you go to Twitter yesterday?
Just accountability, just in the sense of, you know, you're always bad games and good games, but, you know, I just pride myself on, you know, trying to take accountability. And if I'm going to, you know, be the guy to speak, you know, in front of the team, I'm going to be the first to tell you when I mess up and when I do my wrongs. And so I felt like that was something that needed to be done.
What adjustments did you guys make after a tough second quarter there going into the half? I know obviously that big play happened in the start of the third quarter, but what was sort of emphasized at halftime to take away some of those weapons that the Rams have?
Well, it really wasn't, you know, a lot of what, you know, they were doing or any adjustments, you know. It just came down to us, you know, being able to stop the run early to get them in the automatic drop back situations, you know, and that offense, when they can kind of stay on schedule and do what they want, it makes it hard, you know, to defend. And, you know, I felt like, you know, as a team, you know, we fought through the adversity, through the second and third quarter, opportunity to win the game in the fourth quarter.
We always talk about adjustments, and we put it on coordinators. But as a player who's actually out there and seeing it, feeling it, living it, how much of a voice do you have to go to the sideline, ask for adjustments, and how open are Gerard and DeMarcus Covington to whatever you might share with them in that area?
Definitely. I think, you know, me being here and playing in this defense for a while, they definitely take my opinion and anything that I'm seeing, any insight that I can give them, or any player that's, you know, has the trust of the coach who's been around. And so they're always willing, if we see something out there that they can't see, if they don't see on the iPad pictures, they trust us. They trust us to come to the sidelines, give them an honest, you know, honest representation of kind of what we're seeing out there, that do anything to help us win.
All right, I told you I'd get to the good stuff now. That play at the end on Nacua, he gets the ball, you're running towards him, you do a great punch out there. What did you see on that play, and did anything that Nacua was doing earlier in the game give you an indication that, hey, I can knock this ball out?
No, it's kind of like I said, they don't line up very often, you know, in wide splits and just let you play man-to-man against their guys. It's not their forte. They're not going to win. They won't win, you know, a lot of one-on-one matchups that way. You know, they kind of did the same split out earlier and ran a slant with him, and they tried to set it up, you know, later in the game on a double move, same formation, kind of split him out and tried to fake a double move. But that's not their, you know, area forte, and that's why they don't do that, you know, 90% of the time, of just lining their guys up and trying to make one-on-one plays.
Why do you think we've seen tackling be so inconsistent this year? There's been great games. I mean, the opener was an example. You guys were phenomenal tackling. And then there's been some other games like yesterday where it's been a bit of an issue. Why do you think it's been so inconsistent all year?
I think it comes down to first just being in the right fit, you know, being in the right place, you know, at the right time, knowing where your help is within the defense, and, you know, getting all 11 guys to be in the right place at the right time. And so it makes tackling a little bit easier. You know, I'm trying to make wide open tackles in open field and open space. You know, it's difficult for, you know, anybody in the NFL. So it just comes with guys being in the right place at the right time, and, you know, gang tackling, having two or three guys, you know, around the ball will make tackling, you know, a lot better when you're able to do that.
With some of the game planning we saw early on, Gonzalez coming in for blitzes, I think he got to Stafford once or twice. Is that something that you guys have been working on a lot this week, and is it something you plan on mixing in more as the season goes on?
I think it's always been in the game plan. We've actually kind of called it a few times, and, you know, sometimes, you know, offense will give a set to where we have to check out of certain calls. And so it was just, you know, able to keep it on and run the blitz and have them try to get in there and, you know, make a disruptive play. It's something we've had, you know, in the defense, and we'll continue to, you know, throw that in there and just, you know, eventually, you know, it'll hit.
One thing we grew accustomed to over the years for you guys as a defense was sort of taking away an opponent's strength, making them beat you in different ways. This was a game where a layman would look at it and say, well, they pretty much only throw to Nacua and Kupp, and they were able to throw to Nacua and Kupp. Does that add to the frustration or disappointment that you kind of knew how they were going to try to beat you and they still were able to beat you that way?
Yeah, like I said, they have a good scheme with those guys, you know, and finding ways to send them in motions and getting them, you know, in bunch formations and just unique ways of getting them open. And so we definitely, you know, about ourselves of playing, good ball versus, you know, an elite, you know, receiver. But I wouldn't say they had a quote-unquote number one receiver. They have two really, really good receivers that, you know, can move around inside, outside, and line up pretty much anywhere. And so when you have guys like that, it makes it a little harder to take away, as opposed to, you know, in previous years, that DeAndre Hopkins, who's, you know, outside at a number one, you know, 90% of the game, it makes it a little easier to take away.
We're talking with Jonathan Jones, defensive back for the Patriots. Jonathan, Christian Barmore, I know he didn't play a lot, but what did he sort of bring to the defense having him back out there? What did you sort of notice about his plays in the sets that he was in during the game?
Yeah, I mean, just getting him back helps. You know, just having more bodies, you know, up front to help us, you know, run and run stopping, converting the pass. You know, it's kind of his forte, is just being an inside guy that can stop the run and play action plays, being able to convert, you know, and getting pressure on the quarterback. And so as he continues to build, you know, up, you know, snap count, and he's just going to do nothing but help us more and more.
You have a number of young receivers on this team that are, I think, scuffling, still finding their way, learning, whatever you want to call it. And I'm wondering, as a defensive player who goes against those guys a lot in practice and a team leader, do you sort of cross that aisle, so to speak? Do you give a lot of advice to maybe rookie receivers, young players on the offensive side of the ball when you see the need?
I try to as much as I can. Receivers, it's a unique position, you know, in the NFL. There are not too many receiver rooms who are, you know, set in stone of guys who are going to come out, you know, be number one guys. And so we have a lot of guys who are trying to find their way in this league and make plays and show that they're dependable, you know, not only to their teammates on offense, to the quarterback, to their coaches,
and to themselves. And so those guys are continuing to work. They're going to continue working, continue to get better.
Got the Miami Dolphins coming up. You already played them once this year. Snoop Huntley was a quarterback, so that's a little bit different than Tua, who is now back there calling signals for them. What did you sort of learn from that first matchup? It's a team you're familiar enough with, I would say, but what did you learn from that first matchup with them this year that you can take into this game on Sunday?
Yeah, like you said, the big thing is going to be different is just them having Tua back. And so there's a lot more in their offense that they have a timing built in and have the ability to do with him being back at quarterback. They're going to implement, you know, in their offense. And they're just getting guys going. Jonnu's getting going for them. They're using him a lot more. So they a big test, the same kind of offense as last week where guys are in motion a lot, going to be a lot of movement, something they've always done. And so we just got to go out and make plays.
You mentioned the Rams not having a true number one, and it seems like the trend in the NFL of a lot of these teams, the Bengals, the Eagles, the Dolphins you'll face this week, do have kind of that tandem where it's like Waddle is or Hill, they both could be number ones. How much more does that challenge a defense compared to what you were just talking about, sort of the old school, Randy Moss is the number one, you stop him kind of thing? How much of a bigger challenge is it with these two receiver tandems?
Oh, I would say a lot, you know, especially when they move guys around. You can't just go into a game plan in the week and say, well, hey, this guy's going to be right here because who knows where they're going to put him, you know, Tyreek, Waddle. You know, one week he might be in the formation on this scheme that you watch on film, and then the next week in a totally different place. And so when you have those guys who are interchangeable, you know, on the offense, it definitely makes it harder for defenses.
What is when you think Mike McDaniel in this Dolphins offense, what do you think the sort of core characteristics are of it?
Just a lot of eye candy. You know, they do a good job of moving guys around pre-snap, post-snap to try to change gaps. So you're not just lining up on defense and, you know, playing a call. You know, you're making adjustments within the play, you know, as it's going on pre-snap, you know, a guy will go in motion and boom, the ball snap may do a lot of good things with the timing of their motions, getting guys vertical out of the motions. You know, as most teams, a guy who goes in motion, he's either going horizontal across the ball or something short. And so they do a good job of timing that up and having the guy who's going in motion also be a vertical threat.
That is the voice of Jonathan Jones, defensive back for the Patriots. Jonathan, thanks so much for the time and good luck this weekend against Miami.
Thank you, guys. You have a good one.
All right, that's John Jones joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Gerard Mayo. Interesting post-game press conference. We'll get to the money quote, the one that had everybody sort of raising their eyebrows about controlling the game. What was he talking about? What did he mean by it? We'll get to all that next.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.